IFSA is an organization of fire service personnel dedicated to upgrading firefighting techniques and safety through training. Between their manuals, ebooks, apps, curriculum, exam prep, Resource One, and more, firefighter training has never been more customizable than with IFSA FPP products. Visit them at ifsta.org for more information. Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of a fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
All right. Well, good afternoon or good morning or good evening, depending on where you're listening to. My name is Steve Shaw, and welcome to the Perspectives on Leadership podcast brought to you by Fire Engineering. Again, my name is Steve Shaw, and I'm your host. I'm proud to be an assistant chief with Fort Lauderdale Fire Rescue. I'm also honored to be part of the Fire Engineering family as an author, an FDIC presenter, and the host of this podcast. As much as I consider myself to be a student of the fire service, these days I find myself being more of a student of leadership more than ever. Perspective. You heard me say it before, and I'll say it again. It's my favorite thing to talk about. I'm fascinated. I'm intrigued by how we all see things from so many different angles and how that viewpoint or mindset can really add or take away from our ability to lead. The goal for this podcast continues to be straightforward. We want to take a concept or a trait that we associate with leadership and take a deep dive down that rabbit hole. Our fire rescue service is filled with amazing leaders, and each have their own perspective on leadership. I want to pick their brains and allow them to provide as many tactical, immediately deployable takeaways as possible to the listener. And once again, I want to thank Fire Engineering and Chief Halton for allowing me to have this platform and so I could do my part in passing it on to my brothers and sisters in the fire service. So, passion. Find me someone who got into this position or this field that wasn't passionate from the get. There are so many different things that we can be passionate about for our field, whether it's the incidents we respond to, the tactics and strategies, the ability to help those in need, whatever. Passion for what we do has its ebbs and flows as well. So where does it come from? How do we maintain that passion? Where do we get it from? What do we do with it when we have it? And, you know, what do we do when we find ourselves struggling to find that passion we may have once had that is ebbing and flowing, like I discussed, and kind of how do we get it back? So one person I think exemplifies this passion for our craft is Paul Combs. If you've ever taken a class he's instructed or attended one of his presentations, you know what I'm talking about. But it's more likely that you've seen his passion through his artwork. His ability to take what we do and provide us a visual is extremely powerful. And image after image, we see his passion for our craft translated again and again. It's also fitting that we discuss the idea of passion in terms of perspective with Paul, considering that when you do a Google search and such, the word perspective is also or often defined in terms of artwork or drawings and such. I'm excited to open the door on this topic with Paul. So a quick bio. Paul Combs is the editorial cartoonist for Fire Engineering Magazine. And is the author of four books and the illustrator of the best-selling children's book, Sprinkles the Fire Dog, which I have a copy. I read to my kid the other night, by the way, just so you know. Paul joined the fire service in 1995, has been a fire service instructor since 2000. He's a retired lieutenant for the city of Bryan Fire Department in Ohio, where he was a firefighter EMT, hazmat technician, and an instructor for the city of Bryan Fire Training Academy. He's an FDIC presenter, a keynoter, and a hands-on training instructor, and the recipient of the prestigious George D. Post ISFSI 2018 Instructor of the Year Award. Paul is currently an instructor with On Scene Training Associates. Happy to be part of that with you. On a personal note, I met Paul a few years back in, I think it was Muskegon, Michigan. Yeah. We were teaching together. It was nice not only to meet him and see how great of an instructor he was, but he's just a nice guy. And we just really got along and chatted. And it was good to meet a good person. And Paul, I'll say it again, as we always see each other, and whenever we see each other, I'll share a roof with you any day, buddy. So before I give it to Paul, a couple things. Three things that came to my mind when thinking of Paul and this topic of passion were this. First of all, his FDIC 2018 keynote lecture. There were so many nuggets that he dropped during that keynote. And if you didn't get to see it live, it's online, and you can find it easily on YouTube and such. But I highly suggest you give it a listen. It's powerful. One of the things that stuck in my mind after listening to that keynote was a quote that he made that was, "It's the little things that we do that make the biggest impact on the lives of others." Let me repeat that. It's the little things that we do that make the biggest impact on the lives of others. For some reason, that stuck with me, and it's always kind of in my mind. And I hope we can break that down a little bit today. The second thing I think of is, in general, visualization. You know, visuals are powerful. In Simon Sinek's book, The Leaders Eat Last, he states, we are visually oriented animals. So Paul's ability to translate and interpret our world in terms of a visual is just a powerful, powerful thing. And the last thing is, in talking with Paul and knowing what he does, it kind of reminds me, and it should remind everybody, that I know it's kind of cliche, but what we do, everything that we do can be attributed or in some way, shape, or form, an art, whether it's holding a line, throwing a ladder, assessing a patient, conversing with someone during an emergency. Everything we do can really be turned into an art form. And there's beauty in what we do. And when we put our passion into it, it can inspire and influence others. So those are the things I was thinking of. So Paul, thank you for being with me today. I'm just happy that you're with me today. This is gonna be a great one.
Well, thanks. It's an honor to be here, Chief. And after all that, I've got nothing. We're done.
So we're good.
We're good.
Well, let's dive into it, man. Let's get right into the whole subject here in terms of passion. So passion itself is a broad subject. And we were talking about this before. We were talking about passion. We were talking about giving a damn. And more importantly, you know, what to do with that passion. What do you do with it now that you have that fire in you? So let me start with this. What drove your passion, especially early in the job? And where did you find that original passion? And how has that changed through the years?
Yeah, you know, the passion has never been a problem for me. I mean, obviously, we all, you know, and we get into it a little bit later here, I think. But, you know, there are times where, you know, you have a hard time finding that passion. But for me, honestly, from the minute I walked in the firehouse, I mean, I can still remember it today. I mean, again, I'm very visual and I've got that kind of memory. So I can actually put myself right back into the situation where I first walked in the firehouse and I got the smell. I think that's what got me first, was they had just had a structure fire the day before, or maybe two. And so the entire firehouse still smelled like that. The gear smelled like that. You know, we didn't sequester off things then, you know, back in 95. So, you know, things were still right out in the bay. The, you know, the smell of the trucks, everything kind of hit me at once. And I came into the fire service later in life. I was 28 when I joined. And I just remember that feeling like home. I had never experienced it before. I don't come from a fire service family, had never really been in a firehouse in my life. And I walked in the door and within seconds knew I was home. And from that moment on, it was full on passion, you know, from going in and going through the recruit process. I was just a kid in a candy store. I mean, I wanted to be that Alice in Wonderland. I couldn't get enough of everything around me. You know, I was fortunate when I came into the fire service that I had a fantastic chief, had a great first officer. And, you know, I mean, I just couldn't learn enough. And they were always there to provide mentoring, guidance, and education. So, you know, the first 5 years, it was amazing. I would love to go back and take that roller coaster ride all over again because I actually kept a journal my first 2 years in the fire service, everything from the mundane calls to the structure fires to everything. And I look back at that, it was amazing, everything that I experienced within 1 year. You know, I mean, I don't come from a major metro department, and a lot happened within a year and a half. So, you know, that was good. And, you know, it's funny you bring it up that way, because I kind of look at passion in a lot of different ways, but throughout a career, you know, I think we all start with that recruiting passion. You know, when we're that young firefighter, we can't get enough. And at some point that transitions into a mentor passion. You know, where you kind of cross that into where now you're starting to teach some of the other younger guys coming in. You know, and whether or not you become an instructor with the academy or you're just on the floor, your bay floor on the back step, and you're teaching something about the fire engine or something about the fire service to, you know, the younger generation. And, you know, and at some point if you promote up, you become that officer passion. You know, now that's it's an entirely different type of passion that you have and that you bring to your crew. So, you know, it's now that I'm kind of, you know, I'm out of it, I've retired after 25 years, I can look back at it and I can kind of encapsulate and put things in boxes and, you know, and kind of a retrospect of how things went in my career. But yeah, to be able to see it in that aspect of it, you know, and then to kind of put that into an artistic form, it just, every day is a new way of discovering a way to be passionate for me. It really is.
You know, I know you said a few things there, but one thing that you said about the journal, I think that I did the same thing. And for some reason, I lost my journal that I've actually kept the first few years. And I don't know where it went. And it kills me because the stuff that I wrote down there was good stuff. And I wish I could look back on it. I journal today. But I think that as the people are listening to this, that's a good nugget to walk away with, you know, writing down and encompassing what you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. You will look back on that one day. Yeah. With good memories and with learning. So just for the listeners out there, I'm glad he brought that up. Journaling is a powerful thing, especially in our world.
It is. You know, and I'm like you, I thought I'd lost it. And I found it about 10 years ago in some old files that I'd kept, you know, and I mean, it's just a simple notebook. And it was so funny that I looked in there and the heading of one of them was, I fumbled the ball today. And it was funny. I look back at it and I laugh, but I was so devastated because I didn't dress the hydrant at a structure fire the way our SOGs say you're supposed to. It was a simple little thing that I'd messed up, but I was so devastated because I'd screwed that up. it's funny to look back at what was important at a certain period in time, you know? So yeah, that journaling is fantastic.
Yeah. And a couple of other things you said that very much resounded with me. Just, I don't know why, just you hit a couple nerves during the initial talk here, but you know, that smell. Yeah. I remember just relieving the shift at my old firehouse coming in the morning or whatever. And that's something special. You know, you go in there and wow, I want to hear the story of what happened. I want that is a trigger, whether it's not visual, it's more, not auditory, what's the word? Olfactory, if you will. But it triggers something. It triggers a conversation. It triggers memories. It triggers a good discussion or whatever it is. But the other thing you said is feeling like home. And that's a powerful statement, man. That's a powerful, rich statement. I've been in Fort Lauderdale here for, you know, 23 years, 4 months and 6 days. And I have no idea why I know that right off the top of my head. But we're a city department. We got about 110 years of history. But every time I go to places like City Miami, for example, I'll walk into their training building and it's very similar to ours, same history, same traditions, and it feels like home. So when you said that, I'm like, I get it. Certain firehouses, it feels like home. You've been there. Yes. It's comfort, you know, but it's pride. Yes, I totally get it. And going back to passion, you're filled with that when you walk into a firehouse, when you go to your home. So yeah. I'm glad you started with that. And if we keep going this way, we're going to be here for about 3 or 4 hours. So I'm going to try to keep going here.
I'm retired. I don't have plans. Come on, let's go.
So I guess the next question is, okay, now that, you know, the passion sometimes is easy for us to find, especially when we first start. And you mentioned before, like we have a rookie class happening right now. And when we walk in and talk to them, we often remind them, hey, listen, don't forget this. Don't forget what this feels like right now. You want to make sure you hang on to that because sometimes you're going to need to remember that because trials, tribulations, struggles. So I guess the next question is kind of a general question, but we got the passion. What should we be telling our folk to do with it? How do you tactically deploy that passion? What should we be doing on a regular basis amplify or make that passion worth it, do something with that passion? What would you think about that?
Right. You know, honestly, I mean, I think it all comes down to just paying it forward. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, that's why we became firefighters to begin with, at least the ones that came into it for the right reasons. You know, we didn't come into it because we needed a job, we needed a salary. We came into it because we wanted to be part of that culture and part of that life. You know, and you pay it forward. You really do. I mean, I remember being in my recruit school, and it was a regional school. So there were a lot of different fire departments around there. And I'm a very competitive person, so it was great to have that competition with the other departments as well. But I remember even with that passion that I had, I came into fire service with an extreme fear of heights, which is funny that I teach ladders and, you know, I'm up on roofs and, you know, I was up on a roof with you. You know, I mean, I love that part of it now. But when I first came into it, I would get dizzy just being on a stepladder, you know, so that was an obstacle that I had to work through. But it was fun to be able to use that passion that I have to get over that obstacle to share with the other students, even at that time. You know, and so, I mean, I think it is. It's all about paying it forward. It is about taking what you've learned, taking what you know, taking what you feel, the your love for the history of the fire service, your passion for even going into work and starting a shift, and paying that forward to somebody. You know, it's not coming in and being the ass. Because again, who wants to be around the person that's being the ass, right? Yeah. So if you're the person that wants to be a leader, you want to have that passion. You cannot be the person everybody in the firehouse is trying to get away from. You know, so even paying forward comes in with a good attitude. You know, I mean, we all come to the firehouse sometimes with heavy issues on us. You know, I mean, we've got things happening at home. It could be marital, it could be family, it could be, you know, a lot of different things. But when you cross that threshold into the firehouse, you really need to leave that stuff behind. You know, I mean, unless it's something where you definitely need help with, the other people at that firehouse did not earn your bad day. Smile. Say good morning. Mean it. Ask somebody, how are you doing? You know, it's about paying it forward, having that passion, that love for, you know what? I just walked into the greatest place on earth and I get to be here. And again, pay me to do it. You know, you just, you know, it's hard to convey that. I mean, I want to like draw it in a picture and just, that's what I should do. Not speak. I should just draw all these things. You know, convey that a lot better than words. But you know, it is, you know, and I know it's a general term, but it is. It's about paying it forward. It is about giving it away. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's also, it's contagious too.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah.
You have that person that walks in there. Yeah, both sides are the positiveness or the passion is contagious. You want to be around that person that is constantly passionate about the job. But on the other side of the coin, sometimes the opposite takes place too, where sometimes the negativity gets us. And it's nice to have, everybody wants to be around that passionate person. Yeah.
But you know what? Nothing pisses off a negative person like somebody with passion. That's somebody that's, you know, seriously, you want to give them a bad day? Just come in and be happy.
It's actually very true.
Happy. Right. It makes their mind want to explode. They can't stand it because they have to be the person that, you know, they hate the world. They hate where they're at. They hate everything about life, and they want everybody to hate it with them. And they're the first one to share that. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
So be the counterbalance. Be the counterbalance. It's hard sometimes.
You know, you and I were talking about transitioning, and I was talking about my day life up here. And I remember when I first got the days and the day shift, this is maybe, oh gosh, almost a decade ago, 9 years ago, I had one of the lieutenants out here look at me in the eyes and he goes, "Hey man, you see that smile on your face?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "They're going to wipe that right off you." Oh, and yeah. Every time I go out there, every time I go out and see him, I go, "Hey man, it's still there. Ear to ear, baby, ear to ear." And he's like, "Ah," but yeah, it goes to what you're saying.
I've been told the same thing. Yeah.
So, you know, Let's talk about the other side of this. I mean, you know, we come in with a lot of passion, but then life happens and calls happen and mandatories happen and budget cuts happen and stress and family stress. So, you know, life at the firehouse isn't always unicorns and rainbows. Sure. And sometimes all is good and we ride high on that for a while. Other times we feel that stress, and there's a ton of variables that lead to the ebbs and flows. So what would you say are, and what do you do when you reach that point? In other words, let's talk about in terms of tactical, in terms of the listeners, in terms of things that when you find yourself reaching that position, how do you manage to deal with it? How do you balance that when you reach that point?
Right. You know, I think a lot of it is that, and I mean, and I know I come at this with a lot of passion, But like everybody, you know, there are days I come in where the negativity is a lot heavier than that counterbalance that I can add with passion. You know, and I know a lot of it for me is I just surround myself with people that I know will give me the hard answers to questions that I have. You know, they're not the people, they're not the yes men. They're not going to just nod, pat me on the back and say everything is great. You know, there are people that I can come to that will give me honest answers. And I surround myself. I mean, my wife and I, we've been married for going on 31 years. And we were married when I came into the fire service. So she has bought into this culture as much as I have. So she understands a lot of it. Now, there are a lot of times where she doesn't want to hear all the things that go on in the firehouse. You know, there are things that I cannot share with her. She just simply doesn't want to know them. So there are other people. So, you know, you look at it like a ring of, you know, of support. You know, my first ring of support in the dead center, that's my wife. And then I have a circle outside of that of people I can go to that I can talk to when things are bothering me, when I've got, you know, that weight is on me too heavy that I, you know, I feel like that I need a little bit of help there. And then, you know, I mean, and it goes from life in the firehouse to any kind of thing, anything that I'm experiencing, even to my artwork, you know, that I share certain cartoons with people that it's like, okay, you know, do you understand this the way I'm trying to convey it? Because, you know, in my crazy mind, this works great. You know, and I know they'll give me, you know, if it's crap, they're going to tell me it's crap. And I need that because I don't want to put something out there in the world. And they're going, oh, yeah, well, I saw that. Well, then why didn't you tell me? You know, so life in the firehouse is pretty much the same way. You have to surround yourself. You have to connect yourself with people that will help you through some of those hard times, to be that flashlight in that dark room to help you find the exit, if that makes sense.
No, you know what? As I was thinking of asking you this question, I'm thinking if you asked me the same question, what would I say? And I think it echoes exactly what you just said. I mean, having that group of individuals to lean on, however that stress comes in, is massively, massively important.
Yeah. And that person may not be in your firehouse.
100%. Absolutely.
You know, it may be someone on another shift. It may be someone, you know, that you've met, that you, you know, that you're just good friends with, somebody that, again, that you can reach out to that will, you know, that will help you out, kind of help you find that passion. You know, no, I mean, honestly, for me, my first go-to is Captain Mike Galliano out of Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know, I can call him with the deepest of subjects, and before it's over, we're talking rock music and we're laughing every time. You know, we just have that rapport with each other, and he knows what buttons to push to get the load off of me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I cherish friends like that because those are the honest friends that last longer.
No, then that's 100%. I was just talking about that with somebody else here at the job here. And we were talking about as you transition through the career, when you leave the career eventually, you know, what those relationships look like. And we were talking about the idea of, you know, you're going to have probably a single digit number of good relationships that you've known for a while, and you're going to maintain till, you know, for the rest of your life.
Yep.
And you're going to have a host of individuals that are acquaintances. You're going to see them at parties, you're going to see them at trainings, you're going to see them in some way, shape, or form, and they're nice to know. You'll still know who they are and vice versa. And then there's going to be the group that you maybe never see again, and that's okay. That's just life. You know, chapter opens, chapter closes. But within that group, you know, having those people that you know when to reach out to, regardless of what the situation is, accountability partners, if you want to tell them that, whatever. That's huge, and knowing who to call when you need it. And I think that when you go one step further in terms of the passion we're talking about and going through those struggles, depending on what that struggle looks like, depending on if it's work-related, home-related, having those people that can vibe with you on those is massively important. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I think right now, and I would ask the listeners as you're thinking of this, you know, think about this in terms of, okay, right now, who would you call if you had an issue on the job and you were just not feeling that passion? Who would you call to get you back in the groove if you're having issues on a family side or whatever? Or even let's ask it another way. Do you find yourself being that person that people rely on to call, that they vent to you sometimes, you know?
Yes. And you should be.
Yeah.
You should be.
My wife, for example, she's a psychologist. I think the reason she got into the psychologist gig is she was that person. People just kept calling her and calling her and calling her, and she'd be that person to sit, let people vent, and she made a job out of it. So, and now she lets me vent.
That's not where I thought you were going with that, but okay.
No, but you're right. Having that core group people to reach out to get that balance back, that's so massive. And we hear it all the time, you know, like surround yourself with good people. But That's solid words, man. That's powerful to be able to do that for your personal growth. But when you have those troubled times, you know, who are they? So let me ask you more about in terms of your art, because obviously we all know you through your art, and it's something that's, depending on what your focus is, what your tactics and strategies you like the best, if you're a truck guy or engine guy, this, that, everybody can find something that you've drawn or put together that kind of speaks to them. But, you know, considering you've been inspiring firefighters for decades now, and many of your images are basically iconic, to say the least, I'm not trying to blow your skirt up, but it's the truth. How have you turned that passion into your art? Like, in other words, what's your muse? Where do you find these ideas? And more so, do you ever struggle to find inspiration? And what do you do with that? So I guess to start off with, what's your muse? Where do you find it?
Yeah, you know, it really does come from everywhere. As I think we found out just by the 5 minutes you and I were talking before going on the air, you know, we were talking about the stresses of, you know, of being in administration. And I sketched here's a cartoon that's going to be made. We're actually going to collaborate on this now. So it's official. You can't back out. I've just made it official.
Awesome.
But all he said, you know, you said three words. I'm sitting here talking to the audience now. You said three words that just blew up into an image. And that's how my mind works. You know, I mean, that little, you know, little sketch you saw there all ends up in a book like this. And, you know, I'm in my fourth volume of this. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, yeah.
But these are all little squares of ideas, you know, and this is how I think. This is how I take notes.
Hold that up. I want to see that. That's amazing. Golly.
Yeah, so I'm in my fourth volume of these books. They go everywhere with me because I never know when that's going to strike. I never know when that explosion of ideas is going to happen. Sometimes it's like a wave, and I can't turn it off, and it's annoying as hell. You're trying to concentrate. You're trying to be out with your wife. You're trying to do things with your family. You're trying to do other things, and all these things are firing off. This has happened in a structure fire. It has happened in a structure fire. I had a young recruit in with me. Well, not a recruit. I mean, but he was a young firefighter. And we had an upstairs, you know, structure fire, you know, in just a two-story wood frame structure here in town. And we go up and fire is rolling over us. And I'm like, whoa. I stopped him before he turned on the nozzle to explain something to him and then show him how beautiful that was until the light came on to me. Now I'm talking only fractions of a second. But in my brain, I'm like, wait a minute, freeze this for a second because I want to remember this. I want to feel this. I want to experience this. And it's like, okay, not the place. You know, not the place. Turn this off. Do your job. Put the fire out. But that is the crazy part of being an artist. And when you're always on and you're always trying to soak in these things, you just never know where those things are going to come from, you know? And so, yeah, it can be a word. I can be reading. I could be watching something. I could be watching a training video, listening to a podcast, being in a training room. And I will always have books like this with me because I just never know when that's going to come. And if it bounces around in my head, I'm done. Because now I can't think of anything else except this. So I have to get it out of my head onto paper so I can function as a human being on this planet.
The other part of that question is, you know, do you ever struggle? In other words, do you have like a writer's block or art block or however you want to call it? Do you ever struggle in finding inspiration?
I do. I mean, because again, there's an ebb and flow to the creativity, you know, so that's why, I mean, and again, I think that's one of the reasons that it drives me so insane that if I don't get it down, that I'll forget it. So on days where, you know, I do have a problem with some creativity. I mean, there's other things that I do, but I can always go back to these volumes of notes and just start flipping through them. And it's like, oh, that's a great idea. That fits the time. I may have drawn that 3 years ago and it just didn't fit. But for some reason, that idea came into my head. And all of a sudden now, hey, this really fits what's going on in the fire service or some kind of topic or something that I want to say, or the words have finally matched the image to make it more powerful or more impactful. You know, so that's just how the brain works. If I'm really stuck, I used to go for a jog. I don't jog as much as I, you know, walk these days. But if I just go out for a walk, and it's crazy, but I have to go out to the high school track to do it. Because if I take a walk, I mean, we have beautiful parks here, miles of parks. It's too much stimulation.
Interesting.
If I'm trying to work a problem out, I have to go to a very mundane place and walk. And you can't think of a more mundane place than a high school track, right? But just putting in a couple of miles, 3-4 miles doing that, I can work out so many issues in my head because part of my brain is being taken out of the equation so the important part can work.
That's interesting. I would have thought the opposite, but that's interesting the way you describe that. That's fascinating.
It's batshit crazy what it is, but fascinating is a better word.
So, you know, going on, kind of transitioning a little bit, but as we keep talking, you know, this discussion, this podcast, you know, the perspectives on leadership in terms of what we're talking about. We talked about passion a little bit, but we also like to dive into the different leadership traits. And when I'm teaching or leadership or having a seminar or something, I always like the poll, you know, the audience as to what their traits are. And I always love to see what gets popped up. It's so just wonderful to see. And most of the time, it's a lot of the same words keep popping up over and over again. It's like a trend. But from your perspective, what does that look like for you? What are the greatest traits of leadership in from your perspective?
Well, I mean, I know we've talked a lot about passion, and that's certainly one of the big three that you need. But for me, it all starts with humility. You know, you've got to have that humility coming into this. It cannot be about you. From day one, it has got to be about others. You join the fire department not because of you. Now, I'm not saying you're not getting something out of this, but you join the fire department to help others. You become that mentor to help others. You become an officer to serve your crew. You become a battalion chief to serve, you know, and it just keeps going on and on and on. Even as a retiree, I come at this with a sense of humility because now I've got years of experience that I'm still passionate about, that I want to pay forward. And again, I start putting all this together. But now I want to pay that forward as a retiree and start teaching some of the younger generation some of the things that I've learned the hard way, you know, so I don't fumble that ball.
Gotcha.
You know?
No, I mean, that means a lot.
It's humility.
Gotcha.
So and I've got a list if you want to spend the next 3 hours talking about it.
Well, no, we got the floor here. So, no, I definitely think humility thing is big. And I think that what you're doing right now in terms of, you know, having this conversation with me and having it with others and just the fact that you're taking notes from everywhere, even our little 3-minute conversation before, how it gives you inspiration and you're doing something with it to benefit us. That's powerful for us. And, you know, having met you before and, you know, and knowing the birth of your or the scope of your work in talking with you the first time, you know, I got a sense of that. There was no like hubris. There was no, I'm that guy. There was like, hey, I'm Paul. Yeah, I draw a little bit.
You know? If I remember right, you came in late. We went right to bed, and your first words to me the next morning was, "You snore." So yeah, let's not sugarcoat this.
That sounds about right. So let's. One of my favorite questions I ask to the people in the podcast, and this has become my favorite question, but let me ask it this way. Do you have any concerns in the fire service? In other words, does anything keep you up at night based on what you're seeing today? Because you still travel around, you still go to conferences, you're still teaching. So what are your concerns these days?
You know what? And I know a lot of people probably would disagree with this. I am excited about the fire service. I am excited about where it's going. I'm excited about the young instructors that I pull up on Facebook or Instagram, and they're teaching a lot of the skills. I love how they're pushing the envelope. You know, they're teaching skills that I didn't learn when I was coming up in this. I didn't figure out on my own. And they're doing this, and they're pushing that envelope, and they're finding new ways of doing skills to make them quicker, more efficient. You know, because, I mean, when it comes right down to it, and I hate to use it's for them because, I mean, that's become quite a buzzword in the fire service. But I love how passionate they are about doing that. You know, and me at 56, I love learning this. And I'm pulling it up going, I never thought of that. You know, and I'm learning new things by the younger generation coming in behind me. And I love that because that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, and it pisses me off to no end when I hear people say, well, in my day or this generation, or they don't get it. You know what? They do get it. They just get it in a different way than I got it. And that's still fine. You know, as an instructor, you know, it is my responsibility to be able to connect with the younger generation. They don't supposed to come into the classroom and go, oh, I got to learn it the way they did in 1995. No,
yeah, I have to.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. But I have to be able to adjust and to learn how to connect with the younger generation. You know, and it's a struggle at times. And it's a struggle for anyone who has been in the fire service for quite some time. And the generation coming up today, they're going to experience the same thing when they're 30, 40 years into their career. You know, and it's generational. And I love the fact that history teaches us the future is going to be great. You know, the fire service has been around a long time. And it's been great for a very long time. And you know what? The generation before us didn't kill it. We didn't kill it. The generation coming up behind us isn't going to kill it. It's just going to keep getting better. It's just going to be a different fire service, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm excited about the young generation coming in.
That's a very positive perspective, because most people you hear, well, I wouldn't say most. Most is a strong word, but you still hear a lot of people saying, oh, the millennials, oh, Gen X, oh, this next generation. Yeah. You hear it all the time, but I love that your perspective on it is one of positivity. You know, and I think of a couple things that I just said that, and I'm so glad you took what could have been a concern, swung it over to a positive. I mean, I think we all have stories like this, but some of the younger folk coming on. Now, I remember I had a kid on his first day. He's maybe 21 at the time. This is years ago. And I remember his first day in the job, and I found him staring in a bathroom. I walked up to him, and he's kind of staring in the bathroom. I'm like, hey, is everything all right? What's going on in there? He goes, LT, I've never cleaned a bathroom before. And I'm like, oh. Now, one person can easily go, man, this generation, they've never been taught. Instead, I looked at it as, oh, well, let me show you. So I took my white shirt off, got the spray, and showed him how to clean that bathroom top to bottom, left to right, gave him the best once over he'd ever had and how to clean a toilet.
Yeah.
I remembered it. We imprint on these people. And I think that's the power when you have the next generation coming in, they don't know something. That's not a challenge. That's an opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You got that massive opportunity to teach them something, and you're that guy that taught them something. Oh my gosh. How could you look at that as a negative? You want those opportunities.
Yeah. You know, it's like going in, you know, and you and I experienced this when we were teaching together in Muskegon. How many of those students had never started a saw?
Right.
You know, cause you did rotaries. I did chainsaws, mm-hmm. You know, and they had never, especially rotaries. I mean, how many people actually, you know, physically, when you're not in this, you know, line of work, get your hand on a rotary saw?
100%.
You know, yep. You know, and it wasn't an opportunity to chastise them because they'd never had it. You know, right. It was, you know, I'm over there watching you get excited about, oh my God, finally, I get it, you know. And you were almost excited that they'd never had the chance to work with them. You know, and
I was.
And that was so great because, again, it's an opportunity to pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that passion that we have for this stuff, you know, and make it better. You know, it's not their fault they've never started a rotary saw or a chainsaw. But it sure as hell my fault if I don't teach them how to do it properly.
100%, spot on, absolutely. You got that. You got those individuals right there. It's your choice what you do with it. Absolutely. In fact, it's not even a choice. You can't ignore it. You can't say no. You have to do something. So I'm
not glad not if you're any up. Good. I mean, seriously. You know, I mean, we've all had bad leaders, bad instructors.
Yep.
You know. You know, the ones that come in, and if they don't say it directly, it's, you know, how can I make you look stupid today?
Yep.
You know, we've all had that. So it's, if you give a damn and you know what you're doing and you know how to share it, you've worked at how to share it, and you have the passion to share it, you know, that's what makes a good instructor.
Yep.
I don't care how old you are. I'm going to go off on this. Sorry, I'm going to keep interrupting you because this is important. It really is. When I go to FDIC, I don't walk into the classroom where a 40 or a 50 year old is talking to me about leadership. I'm not saying that that's not important. I want to know what the 20 and 30 year olds are saying about it. You know, what is the next generation saying about it? What are they saying about tactics? What are they saying about pump operations? What are they saying about leadership? What are they saying about these things? I don't give a damn about experience at that point. Mm. You know, have you put in the work to be able to share something that I'm going to find value in? And 99% of the time, the answer is yes. Mm. I am blown away by the younger generation. You know?
That's powerful.
The question.
No, I'm glad you went there because there's a lot of people that are, like, going back to the passion thing, there's a lot of people out there that are they're showing their passion through a variety of different ways that maybe we didn't have when we first started too. Whether it's Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, they're deploying content left and right, and you're like, man, this is good stuff. I wish I had that when I was that age starting off, you know.
And now, I will say this, and then I'm going to say this directly to the younger generation, and to any generation. Let's just put it that way. If you are the one on there doing it and you're showing all these things, give credit. Mm. You know, there are a lot of times that I'm sitting there and I'm watching them show a tactic or a technique that has been taught by someone like a Lieutenant Mike Ciampo or somebody that we would look at as, you know, the folks that have really pushed the fire service in my generation further. And they teach it like they have just had the epiphany and they've just come up with this technique on their own. You know what? We're all standing on the shoulders of giants here. If you have taken a skill and you're teaching that skill, and again, you're showing it to a newer generation, you may be saying it a different way, give credit. There's no shame in saying, hey, I saw this somewhere else. Here is my take on it. Or here's another way of doing it. Or you know what? I'm just prettier and I can be on camera better. You know, give credit. Give credit.
It's a strong statement. It's important. It goes back to the humility you were talking about.
Exactly.
Being able to say, exactly, hey, listen, this is where I learned it from. Here's my rendition of it. Here's what I'm passing on to you from where I learned. It's yes. Well, not only is it instructor 101, or should be instructor 101, but it's the right thing to do. It is just the right thing to do.
It is.
You know, it's interesting. I another tangent I was thinking about when you answered the question in terms about the younger instructors, just instructors in general, and going kind of in parallel with the art concept. You know, I've seen a lot of these instructors out there take what could be the most rudimentary or mundane items or tactics or whatever and turn them into art, and it's amazing. I was years ago at the Fort Lauderdale Fire Expo, and it was Eric Wheaton from Winter Park. He was doing a CAN confidence class. Yeah. And I'm so glad I saw that. But I'm so glad I saw that, because before I looked at a water can as a water can, like it's a can full of water. It's a PW can. It's pressurized water. I'm going to use it to put out little brush fires and little hot spots, and that's it. He presented it in a way to where, oh my God, it's more than that. It's a tactic. It's a thing of beauty. He did a whole class revolving around it. I didn't know you could talk about a PW can for more than 10 minutes. And he designed a class around it. Yeah. So, and you could take that to tools and equipment and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
And it's so nice to see people taking something and developing it into an art, whether it's attacked the Mayday stuff that some of the guys are doing out there, different tools. I was looking at social media the other day at the Lockwood hook, I believe it is. Yeah. You know, someone had an idea, turned it in. Now it's being used across the country. God bless it. It's nice to see people taking something, a niche or whatever, and transitioning it from something mundane and simple to almost an art form.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I dig it too. When I go to FDIC or these local conferences around me, I love the other guys stepping up and especially the younger ones stepping up and just getting involved, because quite frankly, we need that passion. We need that passion to keep us going.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, go ahead.
No, please go ahead. No, I was just on.
Oh no, I totally lost. I was looking at something and lost my train of thought. Sorry. Well, this guy goes back to the batshit crazy that flies around in my head. Sorry.
You know, the other thing that as we're kind of wrapping some of these things up, you were talking about and just putting this all together in terms of like passion and surrounding yourself by good people. Even like now when I'm at work, you know, on those days where I'm struggling, I do have a core group of people, and we have, like, for example, competition teams. We have our RIT competition team and our HAZMAT competition team and the ALS guys. Our RIT competition team guys, they're some of our younger folks, and they're probably some of the most passionate go-getters all into the job that I've seen.
Yeah.
And I just want to hang out with them, because when I'm next to them, it's like just osmosis.
You just
without saying a word, you're like, oh, thank God we have these people in our agency. They keep me young. They keep me one. Now, granted, I can't do what they're doing, so I'll freaking be in the hospital. If I throw another ladder on my shoulder, I'm going to pop it out of its socket. I'll be in surgery the next day. But being around that group of guys that are – or guys and girls that are not only into it but humble, when they mess up, they're like, you know what? I could have done this better, or I should have tried this. And just the words they use are ones of humility and humbleness and just self-growth. It's powerful.
It is.
So,
and encouraging.
Oh, yeah. It's like you said, It's like you said, it's nice to see. Yes.
You know, even in my firehouse, you know, I go back, I still teach with our academy, our regional academy, you know, and I love going in, and some of the younger guys we got in our department are that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at that and I see myself 25 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, and how, you know, they just want to learn everything they can possibly learn. And where you and I, when we came on, it was we had to ask people, we had to go to conferences. They're pulling stuff up on their phone and iPads. Right. And then they're going out on the floor and saying, okay, let's see if we can do a drag that way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's phenomenal. It really is.
And it's also a dichotomy. I know we're talking about some of the younger ones and the upcoming ones, but also, you know, it's some of the ones that, like, for example, I went up to Massachusetts recently to teach a class. And in the class I was teaching was a guy who was retiring that day. He was in the class taking notes, asking questions, participating like he was 2 years in. Yeah. And I'm like, that I walked away going, oh, my God. Now that's inspiring too. How do I get that throughout a career?
Oh my God, Captain Gustin will go into a class and he's still taking notes. You know, I did a class the same way. I was up in North Dakota, and they had just given this guy an award for 50 years in the fire service. And he's doing the same thing. He's taking notes, not just in my class, but you know, in classes of others. And it's just, I love it.
It's they're nice present. That finding,
they are present now, and they have always been present in the fire service. Yeah.
It's wonderful that we're finding different areas of passion that we're talking about. Just finding these different areas that we're talking about and kind of bringing up and just displaying, because there's so many areas to find it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You just got to look.
Yeah, and honestly, you do. You just have to
look. You got to be willing to look.
It's right there.
And you got to be willing to look.
Yeah, good point.
You know?
So, you know, as we're coming kind of close to near the end of this, and I'm not sure if it's been 45 minutes, an hour, I have no idea. We're going to keep talking until we're done. But, you know, in terms of other areas, like I always ask the guest in terms of future podcasts, you know, what do our folk out there want to hear about? What should I do? What should I be focusing on based on what you're seeing and the people that are coming up to you in the class you're teaching? What do our folk out there want to hear more about?
Yeah. You know what? I think let's just keep on the theme of bringing on some of the younger instructors. Mm. You know, I mean, I don't do a lot of these podcasts. You know, I try to limit it to probably 2 or 3 a year only because I just don't find myself all that interesting. You know, but when you think about all the experienced guys or iconic fire service leaders, we've heard them. You know, you can do a Google search and probably come up with, you know, 15 podcasts that they've been on. Mm. Give a voice to some of these people like Wheaton, like Basil Ibrahim. You know, some of these guys that are coming up and they're shaping the fire service that's going to happen for the next 15 to 20 years. You know, they're shaping the young firefighters that are coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, I think their voice is important.
No, that's a good point.
It needs to be heard.
No, you got a good point. There's a lot of up and comers out there that are doing so much right now. They're inspiring locally. They're starting to inspire at the national level and giving them a voice, a platform to open that up. And because, like you said, in terms of giving it back, in terms of paying it forward, in terms of just the instructors that are out there, some just jive with other people that, you know, there's so many people out there for so many different people. One may not fit the others, you know? So sometimes you may have that guy out there that, you know, just may hit the right nerve in the right person. And that's all that matters sometimes.
Yeah, you know, just give them an avenue to be heard, and you know, I mean, they will inspire.
Yeah. So let me ask you this: so what's going on with you? What's next for you? I mean, what should we keep our eyes on the radar for you coming up?
Oh my gosh! So you know, the retirement is a work in progress. I like to say that I retired from the firehouse, but not from the fire service. You know, so I'm still teaching, still with on-scene training with you, still doing quite a bit of teaching there with Aaron Heller, who just retired. Shout out after 32 years. Currently in the Keys, I think, of Florida. So you know, he went from his last shift onto a plane to the Keys. So kudos. But you know, other than teaching with OSTA. Teaching with the Regional Fire Academy here. Artistically, I'm working on the sequels of Sprinkles the Fire Dog. Frank wrote another phenomenal script. So I'm in the process of getting that illustrated. That will be out for FDIC 2023, so that will be when it actually comes out. Possibly working on a graphic novel. Still not sure about that one. I've been approached by a literary agent about possibly doing one. So that again,
what does that look like? What's a graphic novel versus like a comic or something else? What does that look like?
Well, it's short form versus long form. So okay. Like by editorial cartoons, I tell an entire story with one frame. Okay. So when we just kind of talk about the process there a little bit. So I've always told the story with one frame. And I've worked to make your eyes flow around the cartoon the way I want. So the story reads the way I want and you get the impact. I had to relearn how to be an illustrator when I did Sprinkles. Because now, instead of telling a story with one frame, I had to tell it over 36 scenes.
Interesting.
With a graphic novel, that will be 146 pages. Broken down even more into long form.
Golly.
So at this point, it's still, we're working on a script to see if it would be good. Like I said, he approached me about doing this. We'll see where that goes. But that's a possibility that could be a reality here in the next year, if not 2 years. But still doing the fire engineering cartoons as long as they'll have me, as long as I feel like I still have a voice. I've always promised myself this would be nothing that I would ever just mail in. As long as I was passionate about it, I still got up every morning and I was excited about doing that type of work. If I feel like I still have a voice and I still reach the firefighters, I'll continue to do it. The day that I feel like that's not happening, I will gracefully bail out, take the exit stage left and, call it a volume and, you know, go on to the next chapter, whatever that may be. But for right now, I'm still enjoying it and still creating the work. So.
Well, that's awesome. And now, so I'll be definitely looking for that.
I said anything else I can come up with that will take up the free time in between all of that. So,
are you going to be at FDIC in April then?
I will be.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm teaching. We're not doing a hot class this year. Mm-hmm. We didn't get our commercial fireground site, but I will be doing a presentation. I believe it's at Wednesday 1:30 this year. Be the target, which we dive a lot deeper into a lot of the topics that we just talked about.
Well, good. Then I'm going right after you, so I'll make sure to attend yours and hop out early and go to mine. That way, everybody's not the entire 30,000 aren't watching you during mine. That's
so
perfect.
Let's talk to Diane about putting us in the same room, and we'll just flip laptops.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh man. Well, listen. I'm glad you had the time to come on with me, man. This has been great. I was enjoying talking with you. I knew this was going to be a good conversation. I've always enjoyed talking with you and kind of just shooting the breeze with you and definitely talking tactics and especially on this topic of passion. But are there any final words as we kind of wrap up here? Is there any final thoughts that come to your mind about what we've talked about, the things we've kind of dove into, especially targeted towards the listeners? Because, you know, as Chief Holton says, you know, like FDIC and a lot of fire engineering is tactics-based. The tactics-based conference is tactical. So in terms of last thoughts to the whoever's listening, what are your final thoughts?
You know, I think it regardless of where you are, you know, I mean, there's a reason I don't do a lot of tactical cartoons. Honestly, I could fill a book with tactical cartoons on how to fight fires in the Great Lakes. You know, but, you know, I don't know what it's like to fight fire in L.A. or, you know, city of New York. So, you know, a lot of tactics like politics are local in a lot of ways, but people are people everywhere. So I tend to focus my work on probably our greatest resource is the people that we have. So I'll kind of stick it with that and I'll kind of circle around to what the way you started it with, that this symbol that we all wear on our chest owes us nothing. But if you give yourself to it, it'll give you everything because it is the little things that make the biggest impact in the lives of others.
That's a perfect way.
It really is. It's just as important to walk in and put your arm around somebody and say good morning as it is to pull Mrs. Johnson out of a house at 3 a.m. in a structure fire. You know, there's no gauge to importance in what you can do in someone's life. It's the little things.
I'm glad you went there. I'm so glad you went there to tie it all up because, like I said, that statement you said at the beginning has stuck with me about the little things. I don't think anything is trivial. I think that everything is
exactly
meaningful to somebody somewhere at some time.
Yes.
So that perfect way to wrap it up. So that all being said, thank you for joining me, Paul. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
So as we wrap this up in terms of fire engineering and FDIC, both Paul and I will be at the FDIC in April. Looking forward to that. If you want to – how can people get in hold of you? What's the best way to get a hold of you if they need to?
You know what? Probably just go to my website, paulcombsart.com. because everything is a, you know, a conduit through there. You can reach me through email, my social media platforms, everything is kind of funneled through there. So yeah, paulcombsart.com.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, that kind of wraps things up. Paul, once again, thank you so much for chatting with me. It's been a pleasure having you.
It's an honor. Thanks, Chief.
All right. And we'll see you all next month. So thanks. Take care, everybody. And we'll see you next month.